It's all very well and good to say, think positive, or you must have confidence in yourself. But where does that confidence come from? In order to have confidence in yourself, you must first understand for yourself where that confidence needs to be applied, and what changes in your life you need to make in order for that confidence to shine through. For my patient, the key issues that were affecting her were her confidence and trust, both in herself and those around her. Once they were identified, it was easier to work on resolving those issues, but it can be difficult to uncover the key issues. For some people, the negative cycle of thoughts is extremely difficult to get through, and therefore discovering what it is that is sapping your confidence can be difficult. We all have goals and aspirations, and it's the barriers to those goals and aspirations that we need to define. A good way of finding out where those barriers are is to use what I like to call the Wheel of Life. Sounds a bit like a silly 80s game show, but it really does highlight which parts of your life need to be changed. So if you need to pause the recording, go ahead, because I want you to get a pencil and paper, and I want you to write this out. Okay, so I want you to draw an octagon, which has 8 sides. It also has 8 points. And at the top point, I want you to write career. Now, going in a clockwise manner, the next point over, I want you to write finances, then health, then friends and family, then love, then personal development, then fun and recreation, and then physical environment. So you have 8 labels now: career, finances, health, friends and family, love, personal development, fun and recreation, and physical environment. Now the center of this octagon represents 0, and the outer circle represents the number 10. So draw a cross through the circle now. That's right, divide it in half and divide it top from bottom. Draw a cross through it, okay? So in the very center, the lines cross each other, write a 0. Then up by career, write a 10, since as you go out, the numbers increase. In a perfect world, this wheel, this octagon wheel, would look something like this. It would have all 10s all the way around. The reality, however, is probably something quite different. So fill in your own Wheel of Life. It's a great way of graphically representing what reality is for you at this precise moment in your life. So I want you to go around the wheel right now and write a number next to each of those things: career, finances, health, friends and family. Write a number. Write a number from 0 to 10. How well are you doing in those areas? I had a patient recently who I had do this, and I want to tell you that his circle didn't look much like a circle. In fact, if you tried to put that on a car, the car would not go anywhere. It looked more like some jagged, pointy object. Although he was considered very successful by those around him, he didn't feel happy in what he was doing. This actually came as quite a surprise to him. He was kind of aware that he wasn't happy and content, as he thought he should have been, but he actually attributed this to his career. He thought that he needed to improve himself through his career in order to feel happier. In actuality, career was about an 8, so career was doing pretty well. But it was his constant strive to better his career that was making him unhappy in the first place. What he was doing was pursuing his career and neglecting other things in his life that would have made him a lot happier. He found that he had a lot of confidence when it came to looking after himself and keeping fit, for example, but very little confidence when it came to a social life. He found that he also had a great deal of confidence in his job, but he felt that his confidence was lacking in other areas such as socializing. So take a look at your own wheel right now. If you were to connect all the lines, remember 0 is the center, 10 is the outsides. So I want you now to connect all the lines and see what kind of figure you come up with if you haven't done it already. What is the one area where your wheel could improve? Maybe there's more than one area, but ask yourself the question of what you need to improve in order to get that low number to a high number. The tricky part comes when you find out that you have to commit to the answers. First of all, ask yourself the question, what do I want? Once you have this answer, double check it. Is it what you really want? This process of clarification is a vital step toward bringing positive thinking into your world and empowering yourself. If your first answer was, for example, I want to get promoted, then the answer to the second question should have been, what I really want is to get out of this job. As you can see, 2 different answers to the same question. Now that you have an answer to your question, you can start to think about exactly how you're going to get it. You can start to think about how you're actually going to move yourself to where you want to be. The trick is to not be upset about the answers. The patient I have, whose wheel I illustrated earlier that wouldn't turn, actually got quite upset after he saw it. He was completely unaware of the impact his strive to improve certain parts of his life was having on other parts, and he felt naturally upset about it. After a while, though, he realized, as I'm sure you will, that this was actually a good thing. Once he had realized that there was a distinct mismatch between the type of job he was doing and the other parts of his life, he was able to stop blaming the job and make necessary adjustments in order to feel better about other areas of his life. What he had done was identify which parts of his life were making him happy and identify which parts he was thinking negatively about. He was able to look at his life in a whole new light, and he started to train himself to think positively. Take a look at your own life wheel again and identify which parts of your current life that you need to improve and what steps you can make to improve them. Take a few moments to do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now realize that that's going to be a regular exercise for you. That's a homework assignment I want you to do every week for the next month. Once a week, draw out that circle, see where it is, and then identify the parts of your current life that you need to improve and the steps that you can take to improve them. And now we're going to move on to what positive thinking is all about. Let's look at the eternal optimist. What is optimism? The definitions can be quite diverse, and it can differ in meaning from one person to the next. The old adage of, do you see a glass as half empty or half full, is well known. If your honest answer to this question is that the glass is half empty, then it may be that you have trained your brain to think negatively. Optimism is a positive, upbeat attitude toward the world that can set you in good stead for your life, whether it's in school, your relationships, your career, or simply life in general. A great way of finding out if you are naturally an optimist or a pessimist is the test first initiated by Martin Seligman, who is widely acknowledged as the father of learned optimism. He defined optimism in terms of how we explain to ourselves the events that take place all around us, and how we see these events in terms of three dimensions, permanent or temporary, internal or external, and pervasive or specific. An optimist will take credit for the good events being internal, and always believe that good effects will last, they will be permanent, and acknowledge that other parts of their lives will be affected. In other words, the effects will be pervasive. So an optimist is internal, permanent, and pervasive. The same optimist takes the opposing view of bad events that happen in their lives. When something bad happens, they will blame circumstances beyond their control, external. They will believe that effects will not last, that they'll be temporary, and that they are limited to this particular situation, or specific. So external, temporary, and specific. Of course, this is based on one's natural reaction to the world. Take the following example and ask yourself what your natural reaction would be if this were to happen to you. You work in a sales department for a large company. One day, one of the firm's biggest clients calls up and speaks to you. He places an order with you, which subsequently gets messed up somewhere along the line, and the order he receives is far from the one he placed. You, however, are certain that you applied due diligence when taking his order, and you're sure that you got it right. But somewhere along the line, something went wrong. The client is very unhappy about this, and he threatens to sever his ties with your company. Your boss calls you into his office in a drags you over the coals for the incident. As I mentioned earlier, in today's society, we're surrounded by negativity, and often it's extremely difficult to see any good in a situation such as the one I just mentioned. But for those who are naturally disposed to optimism, that incident would not be the total disaster that it seems to be. Taking the definition of Martin Seligman, the optimist would see that the bad event, in other words, the order being messed up, happened beyond his control. He would also realize that the bad effects, in other words, getting an earful from the boss, would not last and are solely about this situation, which he had little or no control over in the first place. So the optimist will see this situation in a positive light, and in the future will take steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. For most of us, the opposite is true. We would see it as a tough day at work and go home feeling deflated and dejected. This mood will often carry on into our home life, and that evening would not be particularly happy. Remember the life wheel and how segments of our lives not only impact other segments, but they can impact other people too. This is a prime example of that happening. For the optimist, however, who has managed to see the positive side of things and realizes that it really wasn't his fault, the impact on the other parts of his life and also on those around him are minimal. This impact that we can have on the world as an optimist can have huge implications for all parts of our life wheel, since people will naturally react to positive things in a positive manner and negative things in a negative manner. I once met a salesman who always had a very positive outlook on life in general, and he was a natural optimist. He was well aware of the impact that his positivity had on those around him. An example he gave to me was when he first made a call to a prospective client. He said that more often than not, when you first dealt with a company, the first person you speak to is a secretary somewhere significantly down the line from the director or CEO that you really wanted to talk to. He told me that in many cases, salespeople would fail at this first hurdle. They would find themselves speaking to a secretary somewhere down the pyramid from where they wanted to be. The negativity would creep into their voice and their body language no matter how hard they tried to prevent it from doing so. And naturally, the secretary would pick up on that. The secretary's first impression of the salesperson would therefore be a negative one, or, in the best possible case, a neutral one. When the message got passed on further up the chain, the negative message would be transmitted through the secretary's own body language and tone of voice, and so on and so on. Not only that, but often it would be amplified significantly. These people already work together, so they have no desire to make first impressions. They can say what they really want to without having to dodge around formalities. Therefore, when the message finally got to the director or CEO that the salesperson really wanted to talk to in the first place, the impression left by the salesperson could be quite negative. The salesman that I was speaking to maintained that the reason for his success did not come down to any sales patter or particular sales skill, but came down entirely to his positive thinking and positive disposition. If he spoke only to a secretary 3 or 4 steps down from the person he really wanted to speak to, then he treated them exactly as he would treat the director or CEO. The secretary would pick up on this, and by the time the person he wanted to speak to got the message about him, he was portrayed in a very glowing light indeed. As a natural optimist, he was successful because he had a positive effect on the people around him. What I found particularly interesting was that when he looked at his life wheel, he scored almost everything quite high, all between 7 and 9, except for love, which he scored at a 1. I asked him if he wanted to change anything about that, and he said no. As a confirmed bachelor, he had decided that he preferred to live alone and preferred the company of close friends to that of a loving companion. He had identified the parts of his life that needed improvement and concentrated on them, playing his strengths. He had no desire to change a part of his life that he was quite content with, as he felt that he was very happy as he was. He was, as I say, a natural optimist. And he saw all aspects of his life in a positive manner. His career, his environment, even the aspects where he wasn't particularly doing well, he still saw in a positive light. He didn't want them. So for him, the low score of 1 was actually a positive thing. In that example, I illustrated for you what it means to be an optimist and the power that that positive outlook can have on all aspects of your life. It may be that you have other aspects of your life that you have a positive or negative outlook on that we haven't covered yet. For a person who is optimistically inclined, however, it really doesn't matter. The salesman, who had a low score of 1 on his life wheel under the category of love, saw that as a positive thing. If there are any parts of your life that I haven't mentioned then you should be feeling the same as he did, thinking positively about everything and playing to your particular strengths. So what does an optimist look like? A great way to start is to draw a picture. It sounds a bit like going back to school, I know, but it really works. The majority of people on this planet relate to visual stimuli. So a drawing or a visual representation can be a more involved way of expressing emotions than simply writing things down. How many times have you known exactly what you wanted to say in writing a thank you note or a letter to a loved one, for example, but when faced with a blank piece of paper and a pen, you struggled to get those exact words down on paper? To start with, think of what being an optimist means to you personally and draw that picture. It can be anything. Do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now I want you to draw that same picture with negative connotations. Do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now I want you to compare the two pictures, the one of what it means to you to be an optimist, and the same picture with negative connotations. One person in a study group on positive thinking drew a picture of a large house on a fine day. It represented a particular aspiration they had. They felt it would be an achievement to be able to live in such a house. The negative picture they drew was actually of the place where they currently lived. Curiously enough, they also, quite unconsciously, depicted the weather as being overcast and gloomy in the negative picture. Although their standard of drawing wasn't going to win a Nobel Prize for art, that didn't matter. The picture had highlighted how that person was thinking. They lived somewhere that they were not happy and had aspirations of a better and more spacious home. The lady in question was quite surprised when she realized what she had done and further realized that the only reason that she did not have the beautiful large house was that she had been thinking negatively about her current situation. If she had a more positive outlook on life, she would be able to achieve bigger and better things. Just to recap from earlier, the optimist is someone who takes credit for good things that happen in his or her life and believes that the effects of those good things will last for a long time. They also disassociate themselves from the less rewarding or bad events and believe that the effects of these events will be minimal. Therefore, the self-esteem of an optimist is always kept at a pretty healthy level. They give themselves credit for the things that they achieve, and they don't beat themselves up too much when they don't achieve something. If you lean more to the negative side, then you have more of a tendency to dwell on those bad things, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You think bad things will happen, so they usually do, whereas the opposite is true as well. If you think good things are going to happen, they inevitably are going to happen. So if something goes wrong, and a bad or unwelcome event occurs, you're able to tell yourself that it won't last forever. If you want more information about this, or you want to develop this skill to a higher level, I invite you to check out the website youcanattractit.com. Because you can attract it. You can attract anything you want in your life. That's a website that I've designed about using the law of attraction to get what you want. And it makes very clear that if you focus on positive things, you'll get positive things. If you focus on negative things, you'll get negative things. So check out youcanattractit.com if you want more information about using the law of attraction and keeping your thoughts and the things you attract into your life positive. All right, here we are at the end of the program. You have learned a lot of information. Now, not only have you learned what I have said, but you have learned what you have thought. Think about it. All of the things that I've said should have triggered ideas and thoughts in your mind. While those things were coming up, hopefully you were capturing them somehow. But if not, that's okay. We're going to take care of that right now. I want you to think about the entire program, everything I've said, and I want you to put down 5 points that relate to the program, either things that I said or things that came to you. 5 new points that you haven't written down yet that came to you during the course of listening to this program. Write them down. They could be things to do. They could be random thoughts. They could be thoughts about yourself, thoughts about others. It doesn't matter. Just 5 things that came to you while I was talking during this program. 5 points. Go ahead and write them down now as I'm silent. All right, you've got your 5 points now. Great. Now I want you to elaborate on them. Take point number one and fill it in. Write something about it. Write a game plan. If it's something you're going to do, if it's something about yourself, go ahead and elaborate on that. If it's something about somebody else, go ahead and elaborate on that. Whatever it is, fill it in. I don't want you just to have a word there or a couple words. I want you to explain what that idea was. Develop that idea so you can use it later. Do this now as I am silent for point number one. Good. Now the same thing for point number two. Develop it. Write something about it. Do this now. Good. Now, point number three. Go ahead and develop point number three. Bring it along. Develop point number three to the point in writing where you can look at it later and say, oh, that's what I was thinking about. That was my idea with point number three. So it's not just a word or a couple words. It's now going to be a definition or an explanation or a game plan for point number three. Do this now as I'm silent. All right, now take point number four, and I want you to elaborate on that as well. Do this now as I'm silent. All right, last but not least, point number five, the final point in this program. What really struck you? What came to you while you're listening to this program? Write something about point number five. You've already got point number five written down. Now elaborate on it now as I am silent. All right, outstanding work. So I hope you enjoy learning about Kundalini activation. Remember, there's also a hypnosis recording included with this program that's going to program you to be a master of safe and effective Kundalini activation. So enjoy your experiences, enjoy the new power that you will have as you take control of the natural serpent force within you and apply Kundalini activation to every part of your life. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, hoping you have an outstanding life.